Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. All of us are torn between averting our gaze when a teenager dies in an automobile accident and leaving the family to grieve in peace and then riveting our attention on whatever caused the death. In the latest tragedy involving two Dublin teens, they were not wearing their seatbelts, and it was a one-car crash, so something about the driving also probably was involved, but we know they weren't wearing their seatbelts, and we know that law enforcement officials have said that if they were, they probably surely would have survived. Former professional race car driver Jeff Payne has been working with teens across the country since 2002 through his nonprofit organization, Driver's Edge. He was in Columbus in July and a couple years ago for a couple of his seminars. And by the end of this year, some 70,000 young people across the country will have taken his course. And Jeff's with us today from Las Vegas. Hello, Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Joining us in the studio, Richard Oxender. He's a longtime lobbyist who represented the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs when the legislature passed new teen driving laws a few years back. Thanks for being here today, Rick.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning.
Appreciate it. Jeff, on your website, you say that parents would you address a note to parents. You say you would not give your child a loaded gun and then go have them and tell them to go have fun. Yet many parents won't think twice before tossing their inadequately trained child the keys to the car, which statistically is a far more lethal weapon. That's pretty tough.
Well, and it's very accurate as well. I mean, a lot of parents in this country, you know, in the U.S., it seems that a lot of people look at driving as a right, not a privilege. And it's unfortunate that a lot of families, when it comes to driving, people look at it as a sense of freedom, not just the teens, but also the parents. Oh, I don't have to drive them to soccer practice. I don't have to take them to school. I don't have to do this. So a lot of parents don't necessarily, now a lot do take responsibility, but there's quite a few that look at it as a, you know, sense of freedom, and they don't think about the consequences that there may be. And it's car collisions are by far the number one killer of America's youth. I actually don't think a lot of people realize that every day in this country there's over 1,200 16- to 20-year-olds injured or killed in automobile collisions. We lose a classroom of kids basically every day in automobile collisions. It's an epidemic, and it doesn't need to be that way.
Now, if that many kids were dying of anything else?
That's the thing. There would be alarm bells going off. We've had, you know, the swine flu is a perfect example, you know, not taking anything away from the lives that are lost with that, but everyone goes into a panic with the lives that have been lost with the swine flu, but yet car collisions, that's something we can start saving lives today. But, you know, I say this half jokingly at our program sometime, but I think when it comes to causes of death, that car collisions are sort of looked at as the Rodney Dangerfield of mm-hmm. death. Mm-hmm. And because it's not necessarily a disease or it's not a drug addiction, it's kids being kids, they're just out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily the case at all. I mean, granted, all teens have their own level of maturity, but we live in a country where none of us are necessarily taught how to drive. We're just simply taught to pass a test. And learning the basic rules of the road and the fundamentals of how to operate a vehicle is very important, but it's not going to properly prepare these kids for all the hazards they may face in everyday life.
You know, I studied a social scientist many years ago in college, and he coined the term automobility. With that was the sense of inevitability, or that we're powerless now to change it, that we have a society that largely revolves around automobiles, and this is just the cost of that,
mm-hmm.
an inevitable cost almost.
Well, I mean, you look at, you know, a lot of European countries and such, and you have acceptable forms of mass transit. You have, you know, it costs over $3,000 to get a driver's license in Germany. You know, they take things a lot seriously here, or around the rest of the world. Here in the U.S., like you just said, yeah, our lives are surrounded by the automobile, and because of that, you know, I think driving's looked at as a right, like I said, and education's falling to the wayside.
You were a race car driver.
Yeah, that's sometime I was 17, and so my whole life had been motorsports and driving, mm-hmm. and that's what was sort of the impetus for starting the Driver's Edge program was, quite honestly, just being frustrated with the fact that people are so quick to point fingers and blame young drivers for being reckless and out of control. And the reality is, well, how should we expect them to act any other way if they've never been shown what can happen behind the wheel?
Now, when I was in Driver's Ed back in the olden days, up in Michigan, it was required, one of the courses that was required, you had to take it. I took it through school, but there was a movie, and I still remember the smash up, and I still remember the shattering glass, and I was afraid to pass somebody on the expressway for like 5 years after that. Why am I a wuss, or why don't you know? Why doesn't just a movie showing people dying in horrible auto accidents work?
Well, times have changed. I think if I was Red Oswald, I think I saw the same thing when I was going to my driver's education. But I mean, kids today, it's a different society today, and a movie is just not going to really cut it. But anything helps. I mean, there's a lot of schools and a lot of states that have eliminated driver's education in their schools to begin with, which I just think is ridiculous. But every little bit helps, whether it's a 40-year-old movie now or, simulators or the various graduate licensing laws, which I know Rick has been very proactive in with the AAA in Ohio. And anything helps. And all we're trying to do at Driver's Edge is, as far as I'm concerned, the missing piece is really, giving the kids a wake-up call to how serious driving is. Because a lot of kids do have a video game mentality when it comes to driving because they've never been shown what can happen. So no wonder they think they're invincible. And that's sort of what we're trying to do at our program is show kids that, hey, no, you're not all that. You don't know what you don't know. You're not that great of a driver. This is what can happen in these situations. So,
how does your program differ from what maybe I think of as a traditional, where you sit in a classroom, you learn the book, and then you drive around with the driver's ed teacher, and they cringe as you approach the stop signs in that kind of scenario?
Well, I mean, the whole purpose of Driver's Edge is not to teach people the fundamentals of how to operate a vehicle or teach them the rules of the road. It's about just trying to save lives and make a difference. And it's a nonprofit program that I started here in Nevada in 2002. And quite frankly, thanks to Bridgestone, who's been one of our partners, they're the reasons we've done our two events in Ohio. And it's a free program because of their support and other support we have. We're able to get kids behind the wheel for no cost and show them what happens in extreme situations. So we put kids through a panic braking exercise so they're able to truly experience what ABS brakes do and, just as importantly, what they don't do. We combine that with an evasive lane change maneuver to show you what can happen if there's an obstacle in front of you on the highway that you need to avoid. And we also put them through a skid exercise where they get to experience what really happens when a vehicle loses traction and goes into a skid. And then mixed in with the behind-the-wheel components, we've been fortunate enough to have the Ohio State Highway Patrol at both of our events that we've done out there in Ohio. And they interact with the teens and parents using fatal vision and drunk goggles, sharing some of their experiences that they've seen on the highways in the state of Ohio, and basically just trying not to come across as the man to try to get through to some of these kids.
You bring in the parents, too. That's a little different.
Yeah, and we strongly encourage the parents to attend. The fourth segment of our program is actually a vehicle walk-around, too, that ties into a Firestone Car Care Academy, where we educate them on distracted driving, using your eyes, basic maintenance tips, tire safety. And we encourage the parents to go to the different modules as well, experience what's going on. And throughout the weekend, I think our last Ohio event, we had 700 teens and parents in attendance over a two-day period. And all we're trying to do is save lives and make a difference in the community.
What inspired you to do this in the first place?
Frustration.
Well, they were blaming it on the race car drivers instead of...
Well, no. Oh, okay. This whole process was born out of my frustration that, like we touched on, car collisions is the number one killer of teens, but yet, so many people are so quick to point fingers and blame these kids for being out of control, but we never train them properly to begin with.
But what triggered that? When did that occur to you, that was the problem?
Quite honestly, my whole life. I've done nothing but training, whether it's driver training for movies or corporations or people that want to be race drivers or teen driving, and kids just don't get the training they need. I mean, they need to learn the fundamentals. They need as much practice and experience as possible. The graduate licensing laws, definitely help. But the one little piece that's missing, is the wake-up call, and I think that's what we're trying to provide. And we're just a small piece of the pie, but we're also trying to go out there and bang the drums to make people aware that, hey, this is pretty serious. It's an epidemic. We're losing over 6,000 teens a year in car collisions, and it doesn't need to be that way.
At the end of it all, is there a message that you send to the kids that, hey, and by the way, this is not the be-all, end-all, that don't ultimately experience is the best teacher?
Oh, are you kidding? Yeah, we try to beat it through their heads and the parents' heads that, you know, our program, just talking about our program, Driver's Edge, mm-hmm. we barely scratch the surface. You know, we have the kids for a half a day. We'll have 90 teens plus parents in a session, and they get a lot out of it. We have thousands of comments and letters for, you know, oh, thank God this happened to us on the highway. My son or daughter knew what to do. You saved our lives. But we barely scratch the surface. We give them the opportunity to experience what can happen in situations in a controlled environment. So if anything happens to them on the highway, hopefully they're better prepared to handle it. Along with that, we hopefully give them the tools so when they walk away from the program, they have a greater awareness and a greater respect for driving. So hopefully they can avoid a potential hazardous situation in the first place. But no, we, you know, quite frankly, are somewhat politically incorrect in even making sure we tell the kids that if you think you know everything behind the wheel, you're basically just a freaking idiot mm-hmm. out there on the highway. Because mm-hmm. you don't. And that's what actually we see at the program quite a bit. It's a cocky 18-year-old guy that does think he knows everything. He all of a sudden gets behind the wheel on one of the exercises, can't quite figure it out, and realizes, wow, I'm only going 30 miles an hour and I couldn't do that. Okay, maybe I'm not as cool as I thought.
Do you tend to get kids in? Are they parents who would bring kids in no matter what? Or do they tend to be kids that have been in trouble already?
Oh, no. No, most of the... So you may have heard a bark.
That's okay. I have a dog.
I apologize.
There, but for the grace of God, go I.
No, we... when we did our first program in Ohio, I would say a majority of all the folks that attended were parents that found out about the program and signed their kids up, and you're going no matter what. However, when we returned, it was split right down the middle, because as soon as the teens realize what the program's about or they attend it, they're usually the first one to sign back up or bring their friends with them, because the whole point of our program is to try to reach the kids on their level. It's not necessarily their fault they weren't given the right information, and we try to connect with them. We try to keep the program interesting and entertaining, and by doing that, hopefully they absorb the information and don't shut us out, you know, because the mm-hmm. last thing we try to do, and that's what we emphasize even with the Ohio State Highway Patrol and the other folks we work with, is don't point fingers. You know, we're not pointing fingers at you. We're not talking down to you. We're on your side. You know, quite frankly, it sucks to be you. You're guilty by association to begin with. Mm-hmm. And I think by giving these kids, you know, by giving them a little respect and by showing them what can happen, I know we're saving lives and making a difference.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll return with Rick Oxender. He's a lobbyist for the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs, and you were just listening to Jeff Payne. He's a professional race car driver and trainer, and he works with teens across the country with a nonprofit organization. It's called Driver's Edge. Hey, Jeff, what's the website for that, for people who want to follow along on that?
It couldn't be any easier. It's just Driver's Edge, drivers with an S, edge.org, driversedge.org.
Okay, check out driversedge.org. And if you would like to talk with Jeff or Rick, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I'd love to if anybody's child or themselves has been to this program and can talk about it first person, I'd love to hear from them. 614-292-8513. We're going to take a break. All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Get the stories behind the headlines every day on All Things Considered.
Research shows people living in Midwestern states have a greater chance of being vitamin D deficient.
Researchers now are looking for the population to have more vitamin D in their diet.
For Mooney, the bottom line is simple.
We're not drinking enough milk anymore.
On your drive home, listen to award-winning coverage from the WOSU news team on WOSU 89.7 FM.
And good morning. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News. 34 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20. Cloudy skies today and a slight chance of rain mixing with sleet this afternoon. And steady temperatures in the mid-30s throughout the day. Rain tonight and a low of 35, with temperatures rising into the 40s after midnight. And there is a high wind watch in effect from tomorrow morning through tomorrow night. You can expect wind gusts of up to 55 miles per hour in the afternoon tomorrow. All Sides continues on WOSU 820.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about teen drivers and what to do with them and how to make them safer. My guest today, Jeff Payne, he's a professional race car driver. He also has been working since 2002 with a nonprofit organization, Driver's Edge. You can go to driversedge.org to learn more about that. He teaches teens across the country, about 70,000 so far, right, Jeff, or will be by the end of the year?
Yeah, we just 2 weeks ago surpassed 70,000 total attendance for our program, so it was a nice milestone to get to.
Okay, and they'll be in town sometime in 2010, possibly. If you want to get your name on the list for his classes, go to driversedge.org. When they get the schedule together, they will contact you. Also in the studio, Rick Oxender, he's a longtime lobbyist. He represented the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs when the legislature passed the new teen driving laws a few years back. Rick, what did it take to finally get the legislature to do anything?
Well, Ann, actually, I think it's a great contribution of citizen involvement in that what really spearheaded the effort was a couple in Akron who lost a young daughter in a teen crash, of which there were five passengers. A novice driver had only had his license for a few weeks, and the car was packed with six teenagers. And they had a very serious one-car crash, but it led to this couple really spearheading and pushing hard for a graduated driver's license system in Ohio, and one that would eventually limit teen passengers for novice drivers. So it took us about a year and a half, almost 2 years, to move this legislation. There was opposition from some in some areas when we put nighttime restrictions in and passenger restrictions, particularly from some of those in more rural areas who use carpooling after school and so forth for sports and whatnot. But as Jeff has said, and when you look at the statistics, we're trying to tell parents we're helping to save their kids. Another thing that we don't talk about, the tragedy of teen drivers and deaths of teens is very tragic. But one of the things that we sometimes forget to talk about, for example, between 1998 and 2007, there were 24,655 young drivers involved in over 24,000 fatal crashes that killed over 28,000 people. Of those 28,000 people that were killed in crashes involving teen drivers, only 40% were the teens themselves.
Uh-huh. It's the other victims.
There were 60% who were victims of teen driving accidents, crashes, that were killed as a result of teen drivers. So we have to consider, too, that for the safety of us all, the better off teens are in education, in being able to handle themselves better behind the wheel, it saves lives for everyone, not only the teens themselves. We have to keep that in mind.
Jeff, you know, jump in. I'm just wondering, we talked this last sad case out of Dublin. Neither of them were wearing seatbelts. That's a common problem. We know that. There are other behaviors like jamming the car full of kids, that sort of thing. But is there any one issue that overwhelms the kids more than others that leads to these kinds of problems?
Well, it's a combination of many things. You have the feeling of invincibility and not necessarily putting the blame of that on the teens themselves. It's just one of those you don't know what you don't know kind of things. You mix that with the distractions of texting, talking on the phone, talking to your friends, whatever the case might be, the multitasking going on. And you also mix it with the fact that, I'm sure Rick has the statistics for Ohio, but I know nationally, two-thirds of all teen fatalities, they were not wearing their seatbelts. And it's just trying to get through to these kids where, if they don't feel like they're in danger, why do they care to put their belt on? If they feel like they're invincible or don't know what the consequences are, don't understand them, even though it takes 2 seconds, who cares? I'm not going to get hurt. And, that's why it's so critical to try to get through to these kids to make them realize how serious driving really is. And a lot of it comes down to the parents as well, because kids start learning when they're in their car seat. The first time they're in the car, they're going to start, paying attention to what their parents do behind the wheel. And so if the parents are involved, and hopefully the kids will make better decisions, but this tragedy that you've been talking about from Dublin is a perfect example that even the best kids, these, I read the stories, they sound like great kids, but they made a poor decision. So it's not just bad kids that are being reckless or making mistakes on the highway. It happens to everybody. Even the best kids make poor decisions. And from a parent standpoint, not only do you need to be, you know, involved in your kid's life, you need to know, you know, who else, whose car they may be riding as well. Like Rick was saying, you know, it's not too uncommon for kids to pack into a vehicle. I mean, one of the statistics that caught my attention when it comes to teen drivers is, you know, a lot of people may be surprised to know that girls actually have more collisions and more injuries. And I think a lot of that has to do with their, you know, more distracted, talking to the friends, checking out the cute guy on the side of the road, whatever it is. So they have the little fender benders. But guys have three quarters of the fatalities.
Huh.
And my first collision, you know, it's a perfect scenario because I think the last thing I said before I had the crash when I was 16 was, no, we can make it. And, yeah, so the peer pressure, and you have the your friends in the car, when it comes to a guy, all of a sudden everything becomes a challenge. And that's where the graduated licensing laws are important. But education and the wake-up call is also important.
I think you're exactly right, Jeff. And we have to make sure our parental control is a lot of it. And even with the graduated driver's license system in Ohio, we would like it to be even stronger than it is. But one step at a time, we were able to get the initial part through. But, for example, on the teen passenger restrictions that are in effect until 17, if a parent says, I don't care if you're 18 now, you're still not going to have that many kids in the car just because the law says you can. What we need is more parental involvement, and I think that can go a long way in making sure that the teens understand as much as possible what they're doing when they're putting that, you know, two-ton missile on the road at 80 miles an hour.
Rick, what's a traditional driver's ed course like now in Ohio? Are there regulations? Is it regulated?
Yes. You have to be certified to teach it. And as we talked before, when I was in school, it was offered through the school. That's no longer the case in Ohio. They're done through private firms, but they must pass certain certifications. And then it requires, I think it's 20 hours in the classroom and 8 hours of driving.
So they're learning to pass a test more than they are learning how to drive?
Well, it would seem that way.
Jeff, is that pretty much typical around the country? Do you know?
Yeah, it is. In every state, you know, there's people like advocates like Rick, and there's people in every state that's trying to help make a difference. But it's tough, you know, and even when it comes to the driver's education teachers, whether it's in the school or, you know, the independent businesses that are out there, you know, there's a lot of people that are doing it from an independent standpoint. It's a way to make money, so they're just going through the requirements, the minimum requirements that the states have, you know, of what they need to teach. But yet there are people out there that care, but they're basically handcuffed by the system. Here, a perfect example, here in Nevada, we actually had a young man that killed three of his best friends after having his license for 90 days. Part of his sentencing was to come out and speak at our program. One of the officers that would escort him to the program pulled me aside one day and said, hey, I got to just tell you this. My son, I signed him up to take this driving course, you know, behind-the-wheel course, paid for three lessons. I picked him up after the first lesson. The guy comes out saying, your son did great. There's nothing more we can teach him. I mean, it was amazing how good he was out there. So we'll still take him out two more times, but there's nothing more we can do. And now it's just, you know, and now we're going to blame his kid if he thinks he's a great driver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. That's just a problem that we face, I think, around the country. Rick was talking about the difficulty passing the graduate licensing laws there in the rural areas. Nevada's a great example because, you know, the northern part of Nevada is sort of like the Old West.
Mm-hmm.
So they battle every legislative session just to get any little thing passed because no one's going to tell me what to do. And it's not telling you what to do. It's just trying to, as Rick said, save your life and basically give you the best education possible so you are, you know, a good driver out there on the highways.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. If you'd like to speak with Rick or Jeff, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Mary, you're on the air. You did. You took driver's ed in the olden days, huh?
Yes, and I didn't take it at North High School. Okay. I'm talking about 1954. The summer before I started college, my mother called up Lazarus Department Store, believe it or not, and signed me up for their set of courses on driver's ed. And a man from Lazarus came out with a car and three or four other kids in it. And that's how I learned to drive.
Was it required back then, or did your parents decide that you should have that?
My parents decided. I don't know whether it was required or not.
Rick, how long have there been requirements for driver's ed in Ohio? Do you know?
I'm really not sure, Ann, but I think they began in the early 60s.
Mary, what do you remember from that? What sort of impression did it make on you? Do you know?
I have a degree in PR, and I have an idea that I'd like to pass on
okay.
to your experts. Have you thought of connecting with a large department store chain like Old Target or Kohl's or Macy's to be sponsors of and encourage their customers to sign up for driver training? I think you might be able to do that.
Well, this is Jeff, and I can say that we've worked with Walmart on a local level and here in Nevada, and they do that. And we also have a educational DVD that we were able to put together. It's our version of driver's education video, and we're trying to make that something that's available for free at stores like that as a way to just trying to get something in parents' hands or teens' hands to help the educational process. But I can also say for stores like that, you know, it's not just trying to educate teens. I used to do a lot of corporate work, and they have lots of drivers on the road, whether they're driving company vehicles or tractor trailers. And, yeah, but a lot of companies lose a lot of money with their own drivers being hurt in car accidents as well. So the education helps everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Jeff, what's the age you teach them from 16 to...
As long as they have a permit or license, it's 21 or younger.
Okay.
I believe your state is 15 and a half. But,
that's correct, Jeff.
Okay. And we go to some states where, you know, they can get their permit at 14, and I'll see these little kids that can't get on half the rides at Disneyland, but here they are, you know, ready to drive at the program. It's like, wow, you've got to be kidding me.
That's an interesting point. There's no physical – they restrict what kind of seat you sit in as a child, but – they don't necessarily do that to get your driver's license.
No.
That's
and,
interesting.
You know, we like I said, we're opening it up to everybody, 21 or younger. Mm-hmm. And when we do our program, it's split right down the middle. We have half the kids that attend have a license, half have permits, half are guys, half are girls. We strongly encourage kids to come back as many times as they want, as long as there's a space for them, because you never stop learning. And quite often we'll get a teen that may have only had their permit for a month or two. Sometimes we get someone that, oh, I got my permit 2 days ago. Okay, great. Step in. So, and, you know, if they're still nervous about driving in general, they're not going to absorb as much of the information, you know, as someone else that's more comfortable behind the wheel. So that's why we encourage them to come back as often as possible, because you never stop learning. One side note I'd like to interject, though, is we do a lot of follow-up program. We do 12 and 24 months. We give a pre-test, post-test. We also collect questionnaires from the kids and the parents. And it is amazing that over the 70-plus thousand teens and parents that have attended our events, over 80% of the parents have filled a questionnaire for the first time rate themselves as a 9 or 10 behind the wheel. And over 85% of all the teens rate themselves as a 7 to a 10 behind the wheel, even though if they've only been driving for, you know, a month or two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's why it's no one's a bad driver. No one's an average driver. Everyone thinks they're a great driver, and that's not the case.
Yeah, I'll attest to that. Let's take some calls again if you'd like to talk to Jeff or Rick, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu. Rick is a longtime lobbyist. He represented the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs when the legislature passed new teen driving laws a few years back. And Jeff Payne, he is the president and CEO of a nonprofit organization. It's called Driver's Edge. He's educated about more than 70,000 young people across the country through this program. If you want to check it out, driversedge.org, 614-292-8513. And Tom, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, good morning. I'd like to ask your guests, what are the current state laws regarding cell phones and texting while driving?
Rick?
Yeah, Rick, that would be for you there.
Yes. Currently, there are none. We are working very hard on a texting ban right now for all drivers. AAA announced a couple months ago that it's their national goal to pass texting bans in all 50 states by 2012. And we have several pieces of legislation already introduced in the Ohio legislature. Hearings have just begun. AAA is very anxious to work hard in passing those texting bans. Also, there are a couple of pieces of legislation which would ban cell phone use, and a couple of them just ban handheld cell phones and just make you use the hands-free. However, our position on that is that a number of studies have shown that it's not whether you're holding the phone or not, it's the cognitive awareness issue that when you're talking on a cell phone, whether it's handheld or not, your mind is not where it should be on the road. So there's very little difference between accident and crash rates due to whether it's handheld or hands-free. There's very little difference. They're both pretty much equal. But that's a long answer to your question.
Do you know how many states now have laws covering this? Is it just starting?
There's text drive messaging laws. This is thanks to Rick. He gave this from AAA. Looks like in 19 states that prohibits all drivers from text messaging while driving, 19 states in D.C., and 9 states prohibits text messaging for teen drivers. And Ohio is among the 22 states that has no law prohibiting text messaging while driving.
I would think there would be a lot of confusion for a driver if he's crossing a state line. In other words, if he's crossing from a state that does not have a law going into a state that does have those laws, wouldn't it be pretty confusing?
Yes, we believe that, and that's why we've launched our national campaign to pass these laws in all 50 states in the next 3 years. I will say that the federal government is also looking at this, and one of the things that they're looking at is some people don't really like the method, but it's sort of the if you don't pass the law, we're going to withhold highway funds.
But, like the speed limit.
Yes, mm-hmm. But there are some moves afoot to require states to ban certain activities such as texting, and if you don't, you won't receive your full funds from the federal government.
It could be similar to the seatbelt law. Now, that's a federal law. Am I correct?
Actually, no. It's a state law, but it's very similar in that they have mandated that you pass some sort of law or you will not receive certain funds. Now, in Ohio, we have a seatbelt law, but it's secondary enforcement. It's not primary. Would Ohio pass a primary enforcement bill, we would get several more million dollars.
Okay, we're going to take a break right now. If you'd like to talk to Rick Oxender or Jeff Payne, 614-292-8513, and we'll get to your calls when we get back. And we'll also get to the issue of what is a safe car and what kind of car should you be getting for your teen these days. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Robin D.G. Kelly talks about his new biography of jazz pianist and composer Thelonious Monk. Kelly's learned many things about Monk's life, music, and mental health problems. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides will be here. For 23 years, the Ed Sullivan Show ruled Sunday nights on American television. We'll hear about Ed Sullivan's genius in creating the TV variety show and the program's impact on American popular culture. That discussion begins at 11 right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Cloudy skies in the weather forecast, currently 34 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:40. And a slight chance of rain mixing with a little sleet this afternoon. Steady temperatures in the mid-30s today. Rain tonight with a low of 35. Temperatures rising overnight to around 43 degrees after midnight. And then a high wind watch in effect for tomorrow morning through tomorrow night. Expect wind gusts tomorrow of up to 55 miles per hour. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about teen driving right now and all the different laws that are out there and all the different ways to train them to drive better. Of course, Jeff Payne, he's a race car driver. He's been training people, including movie stars, for many years. He started his nonprofit organization, Driver's Edge, in 2002. He is on the phone from Las Vegas. Thanks again, Jeff, for being with us.
I'm so glad to be here.
And also Richard Oxender, he's a lobbyist. He represented the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs when the legislature passed new teen driving laws a few years back. We have calls. I want to get to you. But I have a couple questions about safety measures in the cars themselves. Rick and I were just talking. There was a car out there at one point that the ignition wouldn't start if the seatbelt wasn't buckled. And it never sold. Aren't there other things, Jeff, that the manufacturers could do to make cars safer? Certainly you know that from your race car driving days.
Yeah, and I think they are trying. I think they're trying to do a good job. It's, I don't think it's their responsibility to try to make up for the lack of education because, nothing beats an educated driver. Yet you have systems mm-hmm. out there that the car manufacturers have implemented over the years. I mean, ABS brakes, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the greatest safety features ever placed on a vehicle. Yet the unfortunate part with it, ABS brakes initially got a bad rap out there because so many people were so uneducated on how they work that people would panic and freak out and mm-hmm. get off the brake pedal when they experienced it, causing even more collisions.
Because you were taught to tap the brake pedal before.
Yeah, but you have everything from, all the first and second stage airbags, different crush zones, the seatbelts themselves, obviously, the ABS brakes, traction control, stability control, the tire pressure sensors and monitors that are standard on vehicles now to let people know when the tire's going down. And mm-hmm. Basically, it's everything that they can think of to protect people from themselves.
Now, in Ohio, we have when the windshield wipers are on, the lights go on the car. That's required. But is that required by the manufacturers?
No, that was a law that was passed this year in the state transportation budget. It is a secondary enforcement, but it is a law on the books now that if your wipers are on, you have to have your lights on. And one of the things, for example, we've been working with manufacturers on is suggesting that they tie those two mm-hmm. systems together, that whenever the wipers go on, your lights go on. Of course, in most of the cars today, most of them have the automatic light feature that turns, that automatically turns them on when you start the ignition, and when you turn it off, it mm-hmm. turns them off another 5 or 6 seconds later, and you don't even have to worry about turning on lights or turning them off or leaving them on and running your battery down and having to call AAA.
I leave the lights on at all times to avoid AAA call. We have an email from a listener. He said, when I learned to drive in the 1970s, the quote-unquote family cars actually were cars and not trucks. Now when a teen driver gets a hand-me-down, it's often a clumsy SUV in less than prime mechanical condition. These vehicles are more difficult to control than cars, and they're more dangerous to everyone when they're out of control. Do you see a trend of SUV clunkers involved in accidents? So what about that? What kind of car do you – it's one thing to give your kid a car – and not give them the training to drive it, but does the car matter, Jeff?
Yeah, that's a great email, and I don't know what kind of trends there are out there, but, a lot of people, a lot of parents, their initial thought for a car is a big tank, like an SUV, or an old clunker, because they're probably just going to wreck it anyway. Mm-hmm. And bottom line is you need to have the safest vehicle, period, for your team. And every year we actually put out our top 10 list of cars we recommend, and they all come down to basically midsize front-wheel drive sedans that have as many active safety features as possible, from airbags to ABS brakes to traction control and everything else. Because you need a car that's reliable. You need a car that's going to be, you know, have as many safety features as possible in case there is a collision. And, yeah, what people don't think with SUVs is that, sure, it's safe. If your son or daughter's parked somewhere and they get hit by someone else, it's very safe. But if anything ever happens to them on the highway, if they make any mistake behind the wheel, the consequences, you know, can be far more tragic because, you know, the higher center of gravity and everything else that could happen with an SUV.
So I should get my kid the new car and I just keep my 10-year-old car for another 5 years then?
Actually, with our list, I have to say, because a lot of parents aren't going to buy their son or daughter a new car. Mm-hmm. But we go 4 years back, and for a vehicle to make it on our list, they have to have, a 4 or 5-star safety rating with NHTSA for the last 4 years, so you know you're safe going back 4 years. They have to have all the active and passive safety features that we list for the last 4 years. They have to have at least one of the top two, a good or an adequate rating from the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety for the last 4 years. So there's a lot of cars out there that you could get not too expensively, but can actually be excellent for your teams.
Rick, do you have a website that people can go to get some more information about this legislation? Nope. Okay. Well, then we'll try to get the numbers of the law, the legislative numbers, the Senate bills and the House bill numbers for you, and we'll post those on the website later today. Let's take a call, 614-292-8513, or email us on allsides@wosu.org. And Joanne, you are on the air. Thanks for waiting.
I'm sorry, did you say me?
I said you.
Okay, thanks. I'm sitting here and I cannot help but see the parallels between the driver's ed in Ohio and the lack of sex ed in Ohio. And just kind of, you know, just because you have one doesn't mean that you know how to use it safely. And
interesting. Okay.
Well, I had a lot of time to think. Anyway, I have absolutely been horrified by the driver's ed, and I am just coming up on my third son, who will have his actual license in January, and I think to myself, wow, let me teach the classroom stuff. I can help him pass the test. But why on earth are you putting me out here with my kid? I mean, some days there's just not enough Xanax. And, you know, my anxiety spikes his anxiety. And so I've gotten to the point where I am just actually paying somebody, a driver's ed teacher, extra to take my son out on the freeway and everything else so that, you know, he can have a better experience and far more than the 8 hours, which I just think is so inadequate.
Well, there is a law. This is Rick Oxender. There is a requirement in Ohio during the temporary permit period before the driver gets his probationary license that he have 50 hours behind the wheel with parental supervision, and I believe 10 of those must be at night. And you're supposed to then sign a affidavit when that expiration of the temporary permit that you have, in fact, done that.
Right.
Do I think that every parent does it? Probably not. I wish they would. But there's no – you don't have to have any proof other than – you don't have to keep a log or anything other than sign the paper to say, yes, we did.
Right. And I do that. But, I mean, even that I just don't feel is adequate. And it just really – you know, especially with the weather coming and everything mm-hmm. else, I mean, I don't feel confident driving in the snow, and I'm certainly not going to be capable of teaching my son how to do it, you know, better than somebody who is experienced.
Everybody talks about the drivers in the winter in Central Ohio. It's like as if they just flipped out. You know, they all talk about Xanax. I don't know what they took, and it seems it happens every year at the same time, and it makes you wonder, should they have driver's ed during the winter only, Rick? Thanks, Joanne.
Well, I think
it would be
helpful. I am frustrated myself at times, and particularly with those with the all-wheel drive who think that just because mm-hmm. they've got four-wheel or all-wheel drive that they're not going to slide or slip. I've told my sons when we had an all-wheel drive car, I said, look, it's not going to keep you from going into the ditch. It may help you get out once you're in there. If you haven't cracked the car up, but there's one of the, I think, biggest false sense of securities that we have is people in SUVs that have all-wheel drive thinking that they can go 15 miles an hour faster in the snow.
Okay, 614-292-8513. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU. My guest today is Rick Oxender. He's a lobbyist for the Ohio Council of AAAs and also Jeff Payne. He is the president and CEO of a nonprofit organization called Driver's Edge. Linda, you're on the air. Hi, Linda.
Oh, hi. I was dozing. No. Actually, the previous caller kind of led right into what I called about, and that was that 50 hours that the parent is supposed to spend with the child. I think that's probably the most important part of the whole learning process. And luckily, I was a stay-at-home mom, so I had plenty of time to do that. And I was also a former teacher, so I think the two together maybe made for the perfect combo. But with my kids, I started, before they even got their permit, I started with them just talking through everything I was doing when we were doing a cross-town commute to a sporting event or whatever. I would tell them I'm putting my blinker on now because I want to merge this way. I would just say everything I was thinking so they would start thinking that way. And I would ask them questions like, what direction are we headed? Are we going north, south, east, or west? Hmm. What's our next intersection coming up? What's the speed limit? Before they ever got their permit, so that they were slowly becoming more and more aware of this stuff. It wasn't thrown at them all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And with my daughter, who had never been behind the wheel of anything, including the lawn tractor, she was kind of timid about even wanting to try it. You know, she was very upfront.
Hello,
about that
was me.
So we went one Sunday afternoon to a huge empty corporate parking lot, and we drove around that parking lot until we were so bored. And she got her speed up. I would throw kind of hypothetical situations like, okay, there's a stoplight up ahead and it's yellow. I want you to make a left-hand turn. You know, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we did baby steps until we were so bored with each one of those that we were ready for the next challenge. I didn't even put her out on a road with traffic for probably three experiences behind the wheel. You know, I'd make sure that we were both very comfortable. So there was no Xanax moment. There truly weren't.
You know, that makes me wonder, Linda, you reminded me of a situation myself, and I was wondering, Jeff and Rick, I mean, when I had my driver's ed training, the first day we went in the car, he asked each of us if we had ever been behind the wheel before, and everybody else had but me, and I said no. And he said, oh, come on. You know, he thought I was fibbing. And I wasn't. And I wonder, is there an assumption about how much kids have been behind the wheel at this point or what? Because I really hadn't. I approached my first stop sign and went perpendicular to the road, and he looked at me and goes, oh, my gosh, you really haven't. Because I didn't.
Well, actually, now we're finding that there's a lot of teens that are similar to this woman's, I'm sorry, Linda's daughter that aren't in a rush to get a license,
mm-hmm.
really, and I'm actually surprised by that because I couldn't wait to get my license.
Right.
But I do have to say, if all parents did what if Linda's still on the line, if
mm-hmm.
what okay, if all parents did what you said you did, overnight we would have a significant reduction in teen fatalities.
I agree, Jeff, very very strongly.
You know, two things just to comment on it. All the best drivers I've ever met in my life, and this is all from the racing years or corporate education, anything, would all say the same thing. When I was younger, my mom or dad would take me into a parking lot or snow-covered field or this and just get comfortable with the vehicle. But on top of that, what she mentioned that she does with her kids is what we talk to our parents about at the Driver's Edge programs is from day one, they're paying attention to everything you do. And not only do they pay attention, you need to call out to them and show them that it's not as easy as it looks. I'm looking here. Watch this car merge. This might become. There's a lot of things going on, and we even sort of sum it up as a little game called I Bet, where you could do with your kids when they're in the car with you is, look, I bet this car is going to get stuck behind this bus because they're not paying attention, or I bet this car merging is going to cut off this vehicle. And because it's amazing how unaware drivers are and how many things you need to be aware of. So everything you're doing, yeah, hats off to you.
Thanks, Linda.
Okay, thank you.
We got an email from Mary. She wanted to know, wanted us to repeat where we can find that list of safe cars and features for teen drivers, and that would be on your website, right?
On our website. I have to say it started off with about 80 vehicles. We whittled down to, technically, it's the top 11 this year.
Okay.
And I'll have to give Toyota credit because they almost had 5 cars on the list. They still ended up with 3 with their Camry, Corolla, and Matrix, but there's, I think, 8 manufacturers that made the list, but they actually had 3 of the top cars, so I was very impressed with that.
Okay, it's driversedge.org, D-R-I-V as in Victor, E-R-S-E-D-G-E.org. Another email. The listener says I would like to hear your experts weigh in on the issue of later high school start times. When I was in high school, I was constantly sleep-deprived at a time in my life when I certainly needed more sleep than I was getting. I really worry about sleepy teen drivers behind the wheel. Wow, that's just a behavioral thing. I guess it's a good question.
Well, he actually hit on something that's becoming a hot issue over the last year or two. It's not just teens that are maybe drinking or have other substances or are doing something. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of kids that. Not just starting school early. They might have school. They might have a job. They might have other activities. They're rushing to get to class. They're very sleep deprived, and sleep deprivation is actually becoming a pretty serious issue. And I don't know about later school times how that would resolve it, but it is being looked at and on a national level because it is pretty serious.
Yeah, a lot more kids drive into school day than there were in the olden days. Jeff.
Yeah, and but it's not just the driving to school. They fall asleep coming home from their job, right. Or they are out on the weekend. And kids today are on the go, and all the Monster energy drink in the world is not going to keep them alert behind the wheel.
Okay, we have run out of time. It went too fast. Jeff Payne he's founder and CEO of Driver's Edge. You can find more about that organization at driversedge.org. And also Rick Oxender of the Ohio Council of AAA Clubs. He's the legislative director. Thanks so much, Jeff and Rick, for being on the show today.
Oh, I'm so glad to be a part of it, and we look forward to coming to Ohio in 2010.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ann.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.